Okay, so it's great to see everybody on, like I said, on a freezing Sunday night, which I think says a lot about our speaker this evening. We will have Maariv a few minutes after the shiur. We'll have Maariv in here afterwards if anybody needs to have Maariv. I want to thank, as usual, Dr. Daniel Lowe and the Adult Education Committee for their work on all of our guest speakers and certainly this evening. I want to thank our sponsors for the evening, the Shulgasser, Luber, Yenowitz, Babbage Press, Polonetsky, and Rohrer families, Daniel Neil Lowe, and Dove and Jill Solomon. As you'd expect, one of the most critical elements of any smicha program, and certainly at REITs, is that students have the opportunity to develop an approach to learning and becoming proficient not only in Gemara, but also in halacha. Many yeshiva guys spend many years learning how to learn Gemara, and then they show up, and it's time for smicha, and they have to learn halacha inside, and it's not something they're used to doing. And it's critical, then, that they have the right Rebbe guiding them as they develop that approach to learning and being able to teach Torah in a meaningful and understandable way to so many. And Rebbe Leibowitz came back to YU as Rosh Yeshiva and directed the Smicha program a number of years ago. There was tremendous excitement both amongst the Rebbeim and the Talmidim at the prospect of having so many of our students being able to learn from a Rav who has become so sought after for his ability to make the learning of Halacha so clear and so exciting. But Rebbe Leibowitz has brought this skill and so much more to the Yeshiva and really to the entire American Jewish community. I should say probably the world Jewish community through YU Torah. He's become a Rav and a leader that the community turns to for perspectives on a wide array of issues that impact both the Yeshiva community and our larger communities across the country. And he's become a role model for our Talmidim for how a Talmud Chacham can impact the larger community by being able to make high-level Talmud Torah accessible to so many, even those outside the Yeshiva. And this year, Rabbi Leibowitz was appointed the Abraham Arbisfeld Torah Dean of REITs, a testament to the confidence that the yeshiva and the community has in his leadership. All of this in addition to his Rabbi Leibowitz's leadership in his own shul, the Beis HaKnesses of North Woodmere, and his role as the head of the Camp Keli Masbinim program, where so many of our children spend their summers every year. The past few years here in the shul, we've had the opportunity to bring guest speakers around Hanukkah time to provide perspectives as we enter this very special time of year, and it is a great honor and privilege for us to welcome Rabbi Arye Leibowitz.
Thank you so much. It's Bereshos Harav Mar Da'asra. It's really a great pleasure to be here, and it's so beautiful to see how many people come out to learn Torah on a frigid, cold night. And I, for one, appreciate it. And I remind you to tread carefully as you walk back to your cars and you walk up your walkways. It is quite icy outside. So I thank you so much for being here. When Rabbi Krohn asked me to come and give a shiur, I said, sure, what topic? He said, anything but halacha. So I said, like, you know what I do, right? but okay, that was the instruction. So we're going to do anything but halacha. So do we have other requests? No. Okay. I thought I'd share with you an idea relating to Hanukkah, obviously, as this is as we're on the doorstep of Hanukkah right now, that I thought was somewhat of a fresh perspective that I had never thought of before. I heard it a couple of years ago, and it starts with to introduce the idea. I'll share with you something that you already know. People always like something that's familiar, something that that you've probably heard before. Although I should add that I once had, I used to have the privilege of Rabbi Maurice Lamb, Zichrono Livracha, davening in my shul before he passed away. When he retired from the rabbinate, he retired to the only natural place where a person would retire to, North Woodmere. And in his retirement, he davened in my, we're the other side of Woodmere, you know, like so. He retired to North Woodmere, and he would comment on my drushos only when I asked him to. So I asked him for some critique, and apparently in one of my drushos I quoted a famous Gemara, and I referred to it as such, a famous Gemara. And he was not happy with that. He said, if you call something a famous Gemara and there are people there that haven't heard of it, they will feel bad about themselves. And your job is to uplift people and inspire people, not to make people feel bad. And I took that as excellent mussar. So I'm going to tell you something that some people may have heard of, others may have not. The word Chanukah itself may actually refer to the date upon which Chanukah falls, right? Have we heard? I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but if you've heard Chanu, Chafei, right? I think this is even quoted by the Mishnah Berurah in Hilchos Chanukah, that Chanu, Chafei, that we rested from the battle on Chafei Kislev, and therefore we have this celebration, because as we know, there are two miracles that were celebrated on Chanukah, the miracle of the Pach Shemen that the Gemara talks about in Maseches Shabbos, and the miracle of the victory in war. So Chanukah is Chanu Chafei to indicate that it's celebrated on the 25th day of the month. How come Kislev is not referred to? It's only Chanu Chafei. You'll figure out which month it is, right? So it doesn't need to refer specifically to Kislev. But is there another example in all of Judaism where the name of the holiday is alludes to the date upon which the holiday falls? Tisha B'Av is cheating, right? You can't say Tisha B'Av, right? That's not an allusion. That's just a way of, right? Tisha B'Av, Asara B'Teves, right? Those are fast days. Tu B'Shvat, Tu B'Av, okay, good. But, you know, the real holidays that Chazal were misakin for us typically don't have a remez even. There's no remez in Chag HaMatzos or Chag HaPesach or Chag HaSukos, Chag HaAsif, Chag HaShvuos, HaTzeres. There's no remez even in the words themselves to the date of the Yom Tov. But Chanukah, a remez quoted in Halacha for some reason. By the way, it's a Tikkuni Zohar. I don't know too many Tikkuni Zohars, but for some reason, this one, they latched onto this Tikkuni Zohar that says Chanukah stands for Chanu Chafhei. So there must be something here. Purim does not allude to the name Purim. The word Purim does not allude to Yud Dalet Adar. There must be something here about this date that is critical to focus on if we are to understand Chanukah properly. So in order to answer that question, let's maybe take a step back. Let's talk about a construction and a sanctification of a holy place, which is, after all, what Chanukah was. It was the re-sanctification of the Beis HaMikdash. So the very first time we had to sanctify a holy place was the Mishkan. And when the Mishkan was built, there is another famous medrash, or a somewhat known idea that there was it's a Rashi on Chumash. So if you don't know it, start being Mavir Sedra, and you'll know it next year. There's a Rashi on Chumash that tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu had suggested that they first build the Kelim of the Mishkan, and only then they should build the Ohel, where they're going to house the Kelim. Whereas Bezalel said to Moshe Rabbeinu, that's not right. Logic would dictate that you do the reverse. That I'm sure this beautiful building, I'm sure when it was built, they built the shell of the building, they built the structure of the building, and then you put in the bookshelves, and you put in the chairs, and you put in all of the beautiful furniture that fills the building, because that's logical. That's the way things should go. And Moshe Rabbeinu was super impressed by Bezalel's brilliance, and he says, wow, Bezalel Kel Ha'isa, your name is such an indication of who you are. You must have been sitting in the shadow of God to be able to understand such brilliance, to build the building and then put stuff in it, rather than to build stuff. My sister just moved recently to a new apartment in Ramat Eshkol, where she lives for the last 20 some odd years, and the builder told her it was going to be ready at a certain date. So she bought a new oven, a new refrigerator, and they paid more in storage until it was actually ready, until the apartment was actually ready, than the appliances cost in the first place, right? Because she didn't listen to Bezalel. First, wait till they finish building it, and once it's built, then you start buying the stuff to put inside of it. If you buy the stuff to put inside of it first, you can end up with just a lot of stuff sitting there. So Moshe Rabbeinu was super impressed. Problem is that, as it turned out, all the kelim stayed in storage anyway, because the Mishkan, the Chumash tells us, was not really erected until many months later on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So then, what exactly was that conversation about? Right? Moshe Rabbeinu says, we should get the Kelim first and then build the Mishkan. But Tzal says, no, it doesn't make sense. Build the Mishkan first and then put the Kelim inside. So they build the Mishkan first, they build all the Kelim, and then they let everything sit in storage. They don't even erect the Mishkan, they don't even put it up, and everything sits in storage anyway. So this conversation, which has become this well-known conversation, because Rashi quotes it on a Chumash, as it turns out, didn't really make any sense, right? As it turns out, it didn't even come to fruition the way Bezalel, with all of Bezalel's brilliance, it didn't come to fruition the way Bezalel had envisioned it. So what exactly is the point? What exactly are we supposed to make of that? And let me share with you a third question. There is a sefer in Tanakh called Haggai. The Navi Haggai, throughout the Sefer, when it came time to build the second Beis HaMikdash, you'll find the phrase comes up several times. It's not a very big Sefer, Sefer Haggai. You can learn it in one sitting in about 15 minutes. So if you want to take a Sefer of Tanakh that Rabbi Yisrael Reisman once commented in one of his shiurim, just take yourself 15 minutes one day and just read through the Sefer Haggai. It's like, it's not hard. It's an easy Sefer. I was once sitting on a plane to Israel with my wife, and she said, the last 20 minutes of the flight, I was awake and I wasn't going to sleep again, and she saw me learning Haggai. And she said, what are you doing? I said, I'm reading Haggai. She said, why? I said, because Rabbi Reisman said that if you have 20 minutes, you should read Haggai. So that's what I'm doing. I'm reading Haggai. So wonderful, wonderful Sefer. So it's a lot easier than learning Zechariah, for example. Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi go together, but Zechariah is much longer. But so in the Sefer Haggai, they're rebuilding the second Beis HaMikdash. And the Navi Haggai keeps telling the people, Simu levavchem al drachechem, that pay careful attention to your whole methodology here, to how you're going about things. Well, what exactly does that mean? I mean, the point is they're supposed to build the Beis HaMikdash. So build the Beis HaMikdash. Make sure that you build it. What's this simul levavchem, that there should be some sort of special focus? What exactly is he referring to? So in order to understand all of this, it's important to know that the date Chaf Hei Kislev did not first become important in the Hanukkah story. The date Chaf Hei Kislev was important long before the Hanukkah story ever happened. It's understood to be the day of the miracle of Hanukkah, but it has actually a much more ancient history. There's a medrash which records the original significance of the date. The medrash tells us, Amar Rabbi Chanina, B'chaf Hei B'Kislev Nigmara Melechas HaMishkan, that they concluded the building of the Mishkan, the preparing of the Malacha, of all that needed to be done, was completed on the 25th day of Kislev. Moshe Rabbeinu had announced on Yom HaKippurim that when it came down, when they were taking up a collection, and they collected for 2 days, and by the time Sukkot started, HaMalacha Haisa Dayam, the people responded with such alacrity to try to help build the Mishkan. The Jewish people, when asked to give, stepped up, and they gave, and they were ready. Just a few days later, they had everything they needed. The Jews were so generous. They got to work, and everything was fully fashioned and built by Chaf Hei Kislev. No building campaign that I've ever been involved with or I've known of has happened with that speed. It's really remarkable. I mean, it's amazing. Can you imagine Yom Kippur? Can you imagine that kind of Yom Kippur appeal? That you just say, look, Chevra, we need to build a Mishkan with lots of gold and silver and copper and like very expensive metals. And by Sukkot, when people in the meantime between Yom Kippur and Sukkot are busy, they're trying to get a lulav and esrog and build Sukkot and everything else. So that by Sukkot they had everything that they needed. And they were done with everything by Chaf Hei Kislev, not so long after Sukkot. Everything was fully done. However, the actual Hakamas HaMishkan, when they put it up, Rosh Chodesh Nisan. For 7 days before Rosh Chodesh, they had Yemei Miluim to practice where Moshe Rabbeinu put up and took down the Mishkan, and he acted as the Kohen Gadol for a week, until finally on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, they got to start with the business as usual in the Mishkan, with Aaron as Kohen Gadol, with everything the way it was supposed to be done. That means, between Chanukah and 2 weeks before Pesach, the Mishkan was in storage. Isn't that wild? Does that make any sense? They did everything right. They responded. They did. They acted. It was ready to go. And from this time of year, Hanukkah, is Pesach even a thought yet? I don't mean to make anyone nervous, right? Is Pesach even a thought yet in our minds? Between Hanukkah all the way until Pesach, it was just sitting there in storage. And Chazal say that it was finished on the 25th day of Kislev, v'nishar mekupal. It was left folded up. Ad echad b'nisan. V'yisrael miranin in al Moshe lemar. And this is not the only time this happened. The Jewish people started criticizing Moshe Rabbeinu. They started questioning Moshe Rabbeinu. They were mocking Moshe Rabbeinu. Lama lohu kam ha-mishkan miyad. What's going on? Where's the Mishkan? Shema dofi yirabanu v'akarosh baruch hu chishiv la'akev simchas mishkan ad chodesh shenolad bo yitzchak. Fascinating medrash. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided, you know what, let's wait for the month that Yitzchak was born to put up the Mishkan. That's a more appropriate time for the Mishkan. But they complained that why wasn't it put up immediately? Me'ata, says the Medrash, hifsid Kislev. So Kislev lost its chance. Kislev is when it was finished, was when it was supposed to be. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, alai l'shalem lo. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I owe one to Kislev. It's a thing you have in Midrashim where like inanimate things, dates, letters, things like that, like have like a relationship and get insulted and, you know, the sun, the moon, the letter Yud, you know, Sarai, right? You have things like that taken off of Yeshua's name. Yeah, you have things like that where like these concepts become insulted or become offended in some way. So Kislev becomes offended. Because, you know, Kislev was supposed to have that Kamas HaMishkan, and it was taken right out from under it. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I owe one to Kislev. So the Chanukah HaChashmonaim is going to happen on Chafei Kislev. Because that's when the Chanukah HaMishkan was meant to be. It was a day that was cheated out of the original Simcha. Now, it's difficult to understand. You know, if that was the plan all along, right, that the Mishkan was supposed to wait for the month that Yitzchak was born. Like you imagine, you know, there was a planning committee meeting, right? God and Moshe and Bezalel, and or maybe Bezalel wasn't invited yet. So God and Moshe, and they're like, okay, we got to get this thing up by the time the month of Yitzchak's birth, by the time Nisan comes around. How long do you think it will take us to raise the money? Well, it's not going to take 2 days. It's going to take like a while to raise the money. And how long do you think it's going to take us to build it? Well, if they tell you 3 months, it's really 6 months. You know, they figure out, okay, so we'll plan for that. And then everything was done like that. Everything was done so quickly. But the whole plan, the whole time was to make sure that it happens in Nisan. So when Bezalel said to Moshe Rabbeinu, let's build the building first, you know, let's build the outer part first, and then we'll build the Kelim. Why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu just tell him? You weren't at the planning committee meeting. You don't realize it's not going to be used anyway. Meaning there was an answer to the question. Instead of telling Bezalel how brilliant he is, Moshe Rabbeinu could have just said, I know, that makes sense, but it's not going to be used anyway. We're going to have to wait for a long time anyway. And apparently, part of the plan was to keep the people waiting, was to create a sense of yearning, a sense of desire, a sense of wanting for something. To give some context to this idea, the idea of hoping for something, developing a tshuka, a yearning, and then it not happening when you want it to happen. That idea is fundamental to every single mikdash we ever had. It is fundamental to the Mishkan, the first base of mikdash, the second base of mikdash. That's the way mikdash happens. That's the way, by the way, binyan mikdash is the definition of geula, the Ramban writes. That's the way geula happens. It happens when you think it's coming, you're yearning for it, you're hoping for it, and you got to wait. And then it will eventually come. Rashi on Chumash says, Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to build the Kelim and then the Ohel, but Salil said it doesn't make any sense. Where are you going to put the Kelim? Rashi says Moshe was so impressed. All this, you look back at it, it doesn't make... Apparently Hashem wanted to give the impression that it will happen immediately. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu didn't correct Bezalel. He just said, you're brilliant, it's great. He wanted to give the impression that it's going to happen immediately. So Bezalel thought, okay, let's go right away. Moshe Rabbeinu knew that it wasn't going to happen right away, but he kept it as a secret. There was a burning desire to make it happen. The Medrash says, "Hayu meradinin." People started getting critical of Moshe Rabbeinu. What's going on? We're waiting for it. And he's like, exactly. You're supposed to be waiting for it. You're supposed to be wanting for it. It's not supposed to come easy. In order to have a Mishkan, there has to be a certain love. There needs to be a passion for having a Mishkan, a tshuka for a Mishkan. And that's repeated, as I said, several times in history. Bayis Rishon, there was a great prophet by the name of Nasan. Nasan Hanavi goes to David HaMelech and he says, okay, let's get our acts together. We got to build the Beis HaMikdash. So collect whatever materials you need. We're going to make this happen. And David HaMelech is on it. He goes and he collects and he wants and he's ready to build the Beis HaMikdash. And he's ready to make it happen. He made an appeal. People responded immediately to his appeal. And then nothing happened. Nasan HaNavi had to come back with his tail between his legs and say, you're not really qualified to build the Beis HaMikdash. This is going to have to wait a little bit. You're going to have a son, he'll build the Beis HaMikdash. Another generation they had to wait to build the Beis HaMikdash. It was happening, it was going, it was moving, everyone was excited. Stop. And then it's going to happen later. In the times of Bayesheni, the book of Ezra teaches explicitly that Klal Yisrael was told to build the Bayesheni. Yeshayahu HaNavi said that there would be a king named Koresh who would allow them to build. And sure enough, this king of Persia told them to build. 42,000 Jews left Bavel to go build the Beis HaMikdash in Eretz Yisrael. They dug a foundation for the Bayis Sheni. The Nevi'im, Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi were with them and gave them permission to bring karbanos because they had a para aduma, so they were able to become tar. They started bringing karbanos. They started building. And then Koresh says, I withdraw my permission. It was in mid-construction project. You know, they had the stop work order. The building department came down and said, oh, no, you didn't meet this code or that code or whatever. Now you need a plumber to sign off. I remember when we were building our shul building, right after they closed everything. No, you need a special plumbing inspection. Another one? Yeah, that's a new rule we just made just for you. Right? So they stopped the whole thing. And how long did they have to wait? 18 years. 18 years. Because there was a temporary withdrawal of permission. Every time. It will happen. It's going. It's moving. Stop. So not only the Mishkan, Bayis Rishon, Bayis Sheni, a start and a stop. Rav Druk, in his Darash Mordechai, says that the Yesod of Chanukah is to develop what he calls a tshuka gedola la'avodas Hashem, a burning desire for avodas Hashem. The Binyan Mikdash is built on the foundation of desire. And a real desire is critical to any sense of Hashra'as Hashchina. It has to be something that we want. It has to be something that we wait for. In Parshas Baaloscha, Aaron HaKohen felt bad that the 12 Shvatim all brought karbanos at the Chanukah HaMikdash, and his Shevet was left out. Each Ephraim and Menashe had brought, so even though there were 12, Shevet Levi was left out, because Ephraim and Menashe count as two. So Rashi writes, Lama nismucha parshas ha-menorah le-parshas ha-nesiim. Why is the parsha of the menorah juxtaposed with the parsha of the nesiim? I just learned recently, by the way. You ever hear the word juxtaposed outside of a rabbi's drasha? I learned recently what the word actually means. My rabbinic intern taught it to me last year. It doesn't just mean two things next to each other. That's just the way rabbis use it. It means two things that are ironically next to each other, that don't make sense to be next to each other. So I guess juxtapose is not the right. Lamanis mukha parshas aminorah leparshas hanesiim. I guess if it's asking why it's next to each other, juxtapose is the right word. Right? Yeah, thank you. So why is the parsha of the menorah and the parsha of the nesiim juxtaposed with one another? Shekshara Aaron Chanukas HaNesiim, when Aaron saw the Chanukas HaNesiim, Chol Shadaito Shalohaya Imahem B'Chanukah Lohu V'lo Shifto. He felt bad that neither he nor any representative of his Shevet got to participate in the Chanukah. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chayecha Shalcha Gedola Mishalahem. Don't worry, yours is going to be greater than them because you're going to light and clean out the Neros. And the Ramban writes, that's referring to the Chashmonaim, which means that the Chanukah of the Chashmonaim was also rooted in an unfulfilled desire. That it was Aaron's tshuka, Aaron wanted to participate. Hashem said, no, but wait. It's going to happen, but not on your schedule, it's going to happen on my schedule. And the Chanukah Sachashmanayim, that's going to come when I'm ready for it. And that's how we serve Hashem. You know, there's a beautiful story. Someone asked Rav Huttner, Zichrono Livracha. Rav Huttner was a yeshiva in Yeshivas Rabbeinu Chaim in Berlin. And then he made Aliyah. And when he made Aliyah, when he moved to Eretz Yisrael, someone asked him if there's anything he missed about living in Chutz La'aretz. And he said, yeah, there's one thing I miss about living in Chutz La'aretz. The desire to be in Eretz Yisrael. Meaning the drive, the passion, the missing Eretz Yisrael. When I'm in Eretz Yisrael, I don't miss it. Because I'm here. But when I was in Chutz La'aretz, every morning I woke up thinking, I wish I could be there. I was mitzapa, mechaka. I was hoping and yearning for Eretz Yisrael. And there's holiness in that. And I miss that holiness of wanting to connect. Which is an astonishing thing if you think about it. Because you would think, okay, you got there, you got it. But there's something special about building that desire. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. So we turn back to the questions that we began with. Why is the date of Chafei Kislev alluded to in the name Chanukah as if the date is the most important element of the Yom Tov? Because that date waited 1,000 years to be compensated. That date represents unrealized potential and yearning. And that is the foundation of so much of Avodas Hashem. Why was Bezalel correct in building the Ohel first? In reality, he wasn't correct. Moshe Rabbeinu had to pretend he was correct in order to generate that sense of tremendous desire. What was Chagai HaNavi referring to when he kept on saying, Simu levavchem al darcheichem? Another thing about Chafei Kislev. The Navi Chagai, which is, like I said, only 2 prakim long, easy to learn, teaches us something very important. Chagai is unique among Nevi'im. You know why it's such a short sefer? He was totally unique among Nevi'im and among rabbis, I think. He told people what to do, and they listened. End of story. 2 chapters, whole book. 37 psukim. You're finished. That never happens. Right? It didn't happen for any other Navi. Right? Yeshayo, it goes on and on. It doesn't happen for any other Navi. It happened for Chagai. He told people, and they listened. One of his nevuos, he only has 3 nevuos, I think. One of his nevuos was Be'esrim Va'arba'a Lichi'i, a nevuah that happened on the 24th day of the 9th month. Anyone know what the 9th month is? Kislev. 24th day of Kislev. He told people about building the Bayis Sheni. And he said, Simu na levavchem. After the 18-year break, when they started again, he told them, Simu na levavchem. On Erev Chanukah, pay attention to what you're doing. Focus on the importance of this. And he repeats it, to be machshiv, that which you are doing, to pay attention to its importance, because unless you realize the importance of it, you're not going to get that Hashras HaShechina. Hashras HaShechina comes because you recognize how important this is and how badly you need it. And what emerges is that the idea of the Mishkan, Mikdash, and Chanukah Sachashmanayim, both Batei Mikdash and Chanukah Sachashmanayim, relates all to this idea of unfulfilled and mounting desire, which is so fundamental to Yiddishkeit. Moreinu Rav Mordechai Willig Shlita pointed out that the Vilna Gaon is an apt name for Rabbi Eliyahu Mivilna, not only because he was a genius, and he was from, in his lifetime, he was not called the Vilna Gaon, he was called HaChassid Mivilna. But then Chassid was taken by a different group, so they called him the Vilna Gaon. But Rabbi Willig pointed out, and I do not speak Yiddish, but Rabbi Willig does, and he said, Vilnar in Yiddish means to want more. So yeah, Vilna was the name of the town, but by a coincidence of history, what made him such a Gaon, what made him such a genius, what made him so, he wanted it more. The more a person wants, the better his chance of becoming a Gaon. You want to become a Gaon, you want to become a genius, you want to become great in Torah, Vilnar, want it a little bit more. And the idea of Chanukah is that, you know, it didn't actually bring the full Yeshua. Even after the miracle of Chanukah, the non-Jews really controlled everything around the Chashmonaim. They were subject to constant battles. the story of Chanukah is really not about accomplishment, because it wasn't the last chapter. It was about ratzon, it was about desire. Like, it's a very important mussar if you really internalize what this means. And when we think about what we actually yearn for, what we desire, what we want, what we value. Rav Druk said he was at the Kotel once, and you know, weird things happen at the Kotel sometimes. So he said some rich American came to the Kotel. It's always a rich American, right? And he pulled out a stack of $100 bills. A very dumb thing to do at the Kotel. And he started handing out $100 bills to everybody. And Rav Druk said he saw people leaving their minyanim that they were davening in middle of Birchus Kohanim, when they were being blessed by the Kohanim, to go get the $100 bills. And he said, like, it was like so jarring to him. Do you think a Birchus Kohanim is not worth $100? I brought a group of members of my shul, some good friends of mine, a few Sundays ago. We decided we're going to take a Gedolim trip on Sunday. So one guy didn't sign up for it because he said, it's so cold to spend all day in a cemetery. I'm like, no, we're going to living Gedolim, not dead Gedolim. Like, he couldn't. So we took a trip there, you know, and the truth is, you know, I shouldn't make Michelle sound like everyone's always eager to, you know, as of the Friday before that Sunday, we had 8 people signed up with 2 of them, and 2 of those were maybes, right? So on Shabbos morning in my drasha, I said, listen, you know how we talk about Rav Soloveitchik, we talk about Rav Palm, we talk about Rav Moshe Feinstein. Who do you think our children are going to talk about? People that are available to us, that we can go and we can talk to them and we can see them. Let's take the opportunity. And then I added, because I'm a passive-aggressive, cynical person, I added, and if you're busy and you're doing something else, please don't come over to me and tell me what you're doing that's so important that you can't come. I did not want to spend, oh, Rabbi, I could appreciate it. I did not want to spend the whole rest of Shabbos. No, but I have a simcha, and I'm sure it's mitzvahs and nice and tovim and good and shemikas and tahit, but please, more people. And we had like over 30 people came, and it was wonderful. Why am I mentioning this? We started in Kew Gardens Hills. We went to Rav Noach Isaac Holbaum, and he gave a beautiful drasha to the Hasidus Tamil Chacham from Queens. And then we went to Moreinu Agon, the Gadol Dor of Herschel Schechter Shlita in Yeshiva University. And then we went to Brooklyn, and we went to Rav Avram Shor. And then we went to Yeshiva Torah V'das, Rav Yisrael Reisman. So in Yeshiva Torah V'das, on our last stop, After people asked Rabbi Reisman a series of questions, I said to Rabbi Reisman, I know we took a lot of the Rosh Shiva's time, if I could just ask you to give one Eitzah in Avodas Hashem, something that people could do, that people could incorporate into their lives to make them better Jews. And the reason I asked him for that is because he's very good at that. Meaning, I can't ask Rav Schachter that. You ask Rav Schachter for an Eitzah in Avodas Hashem. He says, you shall learn a lot of Torah and daven with kavanah. Like, you ask him, how should I have kavanah? Focus the whole time. You know, like, but I can't. You know, like, it's very, meaning, to him, it's like so obvious that you could do all of these things, and that it's too much of a gap, you know, between, like, what regular people can accomplish and what he could. It's just, we can't, like, bridge that gap so easily. So, but Rabbi Reisman happens to be very good at giving, like, you know, down-to-earth kinds of Eitzah. And he gave the following. So he said to me first, he said, Rav Aryeh, you know all my Eitzah already. What are you? So I said, yeah, but not everybody does. So he said something I had never heard before. And I thought it was beautiful. He said that once a week he tries to have a perfectly lechatchila morning. A morning where everything is done 100% lechatchila. What does he mean by that? He said every Friday morning, he wakes up early. I don't think he goes to sleep on Thursday night, but he didn't mention that. He actually stays up and learns all Thursday night. But he said he goes early to the mikveh. He's not a mikveh goer normally, but Friday morning, you know, because this is going to be his perfect morning, he goes to the mikveh. Then he davens vasikin with the svardim so that he can get birchus kohanim. Might as well. It's Ashkenazi minyanim won't do Birchus Kohanim, but you get Birkat Kohanim by the Svardim. So he davens with the Svardi minyan, the slowest Svardi minyan in town. Takes over an hour on a Friday morning. So you could say every word very, very slowly. He says, and I have a perfectly lechatchila morning. He said, now I realize not everyone works as a Rebbe in a yeshiva and can do that on a typical Friday morning. But he said, maybe once a month you could do it. And I'm thinking, no, I probably can't. And then he said, maybe on your birthday. Maybe once a year on your birthday. You can plan for yourself a perfectly lechatchila day. Where, I don't know, you're going to be makbid on every chumrah that day. You're going to be makbid on, you're not going to eat chadash. I don't know, whatever hakpados that you want to line up for yourself, that obviously you can't keep up all the time. But just to tell the Ribbono Shalom, I value these things. I'm not ready for all of them, but I value these things. I yearn for these things. I'm not running out of a Birchas Kohanim to go grab a $100 bill. Because I know that Birchas Kohanim is worth more than $100. I'll say something that maybe will resonate a little more with the men in the room than the women in the room. If you've ever been in shul on a Monday or Thursday morning, and there happens to be a chassan during his Sheva Brachos, or there happens to be a Bal Bris in the Minyan, and they skip the long Tachnun. It's Rav Moshe Weinberger once described it as, you see men skipping out of shul. They're like, you know, as if like, you know, as if it's like this amazing thing just happened to them. Now the whole long tachnun takes, I mean, it should take longer, but it takes just a couple of minutes. It's actually longer than Pesukei Dezimra, I think. You know, but so it should take a lot longer, but it takes a couple of minutes. And we should look for forward to the opportunity, to opportunities to do things. The opportunity to serve the Ribbono Shalom. You know, the Sefer Otzos HaTorah tells a story of a Talmud who noticed that the Chavetz Chaim was wandering the streets late on a frigid winter night. And what was he doing? It was like 2 a.m. It was a frigid winter night like this. And he was walking around. And the student happened to have seen the Chavetz Chaim's sister the next day. And he said, you know, maybe you can explain what your brother was doing. It was freezing cold outside. And Rodin got really cold. He was walking around. And she said, no, it's already been 3 nights in a row that he's been doing this at all hours of the night because it's been cloudy all month. And he hasn't had an opportunity for Kiddush Levana yet. He's been waiting for Kiddush Levana. So he's waiting. Maybe the clouds will part and he'll be able to say Kiddush Levana. Now think for a moment. On that Motzai Shabbos that we're supposed to say Kiddush Levana, and the Gabbai comes in and he says, cloudy, no Levana tonight. The nanosecond that it takes us to get into the car and go home quickly before the clouds part, and I'm stuck here for another 5 minutes, 10 minutes. I have a Talmud, a dear friend actually, who wanted to write a book called The Book of Jewish Awesome. There's a book out there in the market called The Book of Awesome. So The Book of Awesome is like just like a book of like pick-me-up kind of things that make you feel good. You know, you put on a winter coat for the first time in the season, you put your hand in the pocket and there's a $20 bill. That's kind of awesome. So you just got one page after another. You're like, you're pulling up to a red light and then it turns green just as you're pulling up, right? Or that truck that's in front of you finally turns out of your way and now you're able to, right? Just like little awesome things. So my Talmud wanted to write the book of Jewish awesome, of like things that are awesome in Judaism that are. And then he realized that everything he was asking people, every suggestion he got was the opportunity to miss out on doing a mitzvah. When it's cloudy on Kiddush Levana night, when it's raining on Sukkah, so you don't have to go into the Sukkah, when it's everything. And he realized the book would be the biggest Chilul Hashem in the entire world. So he didn't publish it. He also asked the author of the Book of Awesome, who told him, you absolutely do not have permission to publish the Book of Jewish Awesome, so he would have gotten sued into oblivion. But the musr of creating that sense of yearning is something that's so critical to a sense of avodas Hashem. You know, maybe I'll close with one final idea. Pesach Sheni was one of 4 separate times that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't immediately know the answer to a question. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know the answer for Benos Slavchad regarding Yerusha Sabas, regarding, we just finished Pesach Sabas from the Daf Yomi. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know about the halachos of a daughter inheriting her father when there are no brothers. He didn't know what to do with the Megadef, with his sin. He didn't know what to do with the Mekoshesh, different sinners in the Midbar. And he didn't know about Pesach Sheni, for those people who were Tamei on Pesach Rishon. Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah was unique because he could speak to Hashem on demand. He didn't have to wait for a prophetic vision to come to him. He could say, hey, Hashem, and Hashem would just, you know, I don't think that's how it worked. You know, he must have had some other formal, you know, way of summoning Hashem. But we find that only in two of those instances did Moshe Rabbeinu actually go and ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When it came to Bnei Slavcha, the Torah says, Vayikrav Moshe es Mishpatan lifnei Hashem, and again by Pesach Sheni, Imdu ve'eshma mayitzave Hashem. Moshe never pursued the matter directly with God when it came to the Makoshesh and when it came to the Megadev. Why the difference? Why when dealing with the sinners, and he had forgotten, he didn't know how to deal with them, he didn't know what punishment to give them, he didn't know what to do, he does not go and summon HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But he uses, you could imagine, you only have so many times where you can, you know, feel it's okay to bother HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak. And he used it twice, for the Bnos Slavchad and for Pesach Sheni. There's a beautiful sefer called Chelkas Binyamin from my elementary school Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Binyamin Kamenetsky Zatzal. Rav Binyamin Kamenetsky, when he died, he's the older brother of Rishmol Kamenetsky, the famous Rosh Yeshiva, the Philadelphia Yeshiva. Rav Binyamin, when he died, the family found a bunch of like napkins and scraps of paper with little notes of Divrei Torah everywhere, like in all of his svarim and all of, you know, it was from this hotel or that simcha place, because if he was always asked to speak at bar mitzvahs, so he would just jot something down on a napkin. So his family put in the work to put it all together, and they made a beautiful 2-volume sefer of his little notes that he made on a napkin, these Divrei Torah that just came to him whenever they came to him. And in that sefer, Rabbi Yamin Zichron Levracha quotes Hagrid Soloveitchik Zatzal, me Boston. And I went to elementary school there for 8 years. I never once heard him quote the Rav, but he quoted the Rav in the sefer. And he says that the reason Moshe Rabbeinu consulted with HaKadosh Baruch Hu immediately about Bnos Slavchan and Pesach Sheni was that in both cases there were people who were yearning to know, who were interested in trying to connect to a mitzvah, who said, I want this mitzvah. I want this opportunity. Bnei Slavchad wanted a piece of Eretz Yisrael. The people who were Tameh from Pesach Rishon wanted an opportunity to participate in Korban Pesach. Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, Korban Pesach. And in a case where people express a level of passion and desire and yearning, Moshe Rabbeinu says, Halalu Zrizim Heim. These are the kinds of people that are worth bothering the Ribbono Shel Olam for. You know, when you go up to Shemayim after 120 years, we know what the questions are going to be. The Gemara Maseches Shabbos tells us that it's what we call in YU, we call a mesora, right, for the final exam. We know exactly what the final exam is going to consist of. There are 6 questions on the final exam. And one of the questions is Tzipisa Li Yeshua. Yeshua comes from tzipisa, from hoping for it, from yearning for it. That's the way God built it into the way the world works. I remember talking to a mother of a chayal who was taken from us, who was killed in Gaza. And she said, I really yearn for Yeshua, more than regular people. Because I believe that when it happens, I'm going to be reunited with my son. I'm going to be able to see him again. That yearning, that desire, that wanting, that's something that we're supposed to build within us. And only when we build that, only when we have that, when we build it up, are we ultimately going to see that geula. And that ultimately, when we're looking at those Neiros Chanukah, should be part of what we think about, part of what we remember. In a time where we so desperately need Yeshua, we need geula, we should think about how badly we yearn for it and how ready we are to answer that question. See, peace of the Yeshua, that yes, indeed, we were mitzapa, we are mitzapa, and therefore our Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to deliver. Chanukah Sameach.